This is the Amp Hour Podcast, released August 24th, 2020, episode 506, Hipster Fodder.
Welcome to the Amp Hour. I'm Dave Jones from the EEV blog.
And I'm Chris Gamble of Contextual Electronics.
Can't remember this time we were this early.
Yeah, I know. We're recording like a week early. For a very good reason, though. I'm going to be gone for like 3 weeks.
Yeah. You're out of here. Go and walk about.
Go and walk about. I'm also, getting married, and this is actually my honeymoon. So,
congratulations.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm very excited. Well, Dave, you have a guest you'll have, and I think I have one.
Hopefully,
in the can as well. So we should continue shows, but there is a possible surface interruption. If so, well, it's for good reason.
We'll be good. We can handle it.
Yeah, I think so too. So what's going on over there in Aussie land?
I'm still in the process of moving, usual crap.
Slow and steady wins the race, especially when you're... Yeah. There is no race.
Well, this brings up an interesting point. With all the, chaos and mayhem, chaos, I'm mayhem. Do you?
No, sorry.
Lethal Weapon.
Oh, no. No,
you've never watched Lethal Weapon. Oh, well, there you go. Anyway. So, it's okay. Yeah, it's an interesting decision because it's an interesting time because of all the chaos and mayhem going around and all the massive loss of business and everything. I've started to notice here in my local business park, like I've been here for 10 years now, right? So that's a long time to get to see trends of office space, right? Because mine's your typical business office park. It's not an industrial type office park. It's more like all just corporate office tower.
Lawyers and startups.
Yeah, lawyers and real estate agents and insurance brokers and whatnot. Yep. Yeah, all that sort of jazz. And lowly old me. So anyway. Well, we do have ResMed here, ResMed. So we do manufacturing here. ResMed is a huge Aussie. They do sleep apnea devices, for...
Oh, okay. Like CPAP.
They're one of the world... Yeah, CPAP stuff. They're one of the world leaders in that sort of thing. And they're in this business park.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, but apart from that, it's pretty much... that's where a lot of my former colleagues went. They call it the ResMed Retirement Village because it's one of those places you go to. You have a job for life. You have one of big, huge monolith of a company.
I always wondered how I would fare in one of those places. Like if I would get bored.
Yeah, but you've worked in Samsung.
Yeah, that's true. It was kind of Samsung was like a higher pitch kind of. But Keithley was kind of... It's not super fast paced. Yeah, there was like long development cycles and 30-year veterans there, that kind of thing. Okay.
Anyway, yes, ResMed Retirement Village. Anyway,
that's good.
What was I getting at? Yes, so I've been here long enough.
Tenure cycle.
So I've been long enough here to see trends and things like that. So I'm now seeing record numbers of office vacancies and for sale signs. Prices aren't dropping. If you want to buy a place, prices don't seem to have dropped. I've mentioned before that in the last 4 years since they put in the train line here, prices just doubled or went up, two and a half, and 250, 300%, something like that. Prices just went crazy. And they don't seem to be coming down yet, but there's lots of vacancies. And this comes about because I talked about this privately with my supporters, right, on the forum and on Patreon as well. And I asked for a poll because I'm moving out of here, right? My lease is up end of October, right? So I've got to be out of here. I don't want to renew it for another year or 2 years or whatever because it's pricey, right? It's like, it's like $46,000 a year, right, to be here, right?
Yeah.
That's a lot of coin. Right.
That is a lot of coin, yeah.
But that was offset by the fact that I was renting out my old lab, right? So I was getting income from that. Mm-hmm. But they moved it, right? So it didn't seem like that big of a burden. You know, it sounds like a lot, and it is, right?
It is, but a lot, yeah. Anyway.
Right.
But, business expense, and it feels like it's...
It's you know, worthwhile. I've got a window and stuff, you know, so it's like, you know. Anyway, so, but that was when I had David working for me full-time, and I had, I've also got a part-time logistics person as well, handles the packing and shipping, you know, so we had like 2.5 people in here. So 100 square meters that I've got at the moment sounds, you know, like it's, you know, nice and comfortable. And now that I don't have a full-time employee anymore, it's pretty much just me here. I realize that this 100 square meters I'm paying good money for, is like, it's, you know, it's pretty much wasted, especially when I cleaned up stuff and I go, wow, I do actually have a lot
of
space.
You see the floor, you can see how much floor space you have, right?
Exactly. And I go, yeah, this is just, you know, look. And my lease was I've been here for 2 years, so my lease was coming up. And I have an extension in the lease where I can, you know, they can't throw me out. I can choose to extend it. But I've got to make that choice. So I've got to sign up for another longer term lease.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I've got to make that decision now. Or I had to make that decision a while back because you've got to give them 3 months notice, et cetera. So I decided, no, I'll leave and I'll figure out what else to do. Either go back to my old lab or rent a slightly smaller space, you know. So, and I was going to move back to my old lab, but I just found like a really nice space which I had my eye on for the last decade. It's become available. It's available. Mm. It's one of, you know, but there's vacancies everywhere. There's like 4 or 5 in this building. There's 5 in my old lab building. There's 4 in this other building that I'm talking about now, and it's my old one where I did my editing in, which you've been to the view of the mountains.
That was.
That's got like 7 vacancies or something. So there's no shortage of places available. So anyway, so I can pick and choose, although finding a good one is hard, you know, one that's suitable, of course. But anyway, I found a real nice one. It's got like floor to ceiling windows, and it's got like lots of trees outside, and you can see, you know. Anyway, just kind
of. I like to watch the squirrels.
I like to watch the squirrels. Yeah. it reminds me of the squirrel on the wire from Ferris Bueller.
Oh yeah.
Where, you know, he opens the windows and the squirrel runs across, and that was a fake squirrel on a line because they had a real squirrel but they couldn't prompt it to do the thing, so they had to get a fake one and just pull it across on a string.
Oh man.
You know. Anyway, sorry, that just popped into my head. Yeah, so, you know, and it's a reasonable price. It's 70 square meters, so it's sort of like halfway between my old 50 square meter lab and this one at 100. So it's sort of, you know, nice. An extra 20 meters goes along, 20 square meters goes a long way. Mm-hmm. And I thought, oh, look, should I go sign up for another long-term lease and hire that, you know, rent that place and then try and rent out my old one? But the problem is, as I said, so many vacancies.
Right, trying to get anyone to rent out your old one would be tough.
Rent out my old, especially when it's windowless. And there's new buildings in this park, I'm not kidding, like there's a new building in this park which has a commercial office building, but it also does restaurants and residential and stuff. It's got a putting green on the top. It's got a huge infinity pool which overlooks the mountains. It's got a gym. It's got an outdoor cinema. This is all on the roof. Like, you know, it's kind of... Anyway, not on the roof. It's kind of
sounds like a startup or something. You know, you need to.
It's like it's one of those things. You know, you get the concierge and get the concierge service in the foyer, and you know, it's all sort of wanky, and you know, so you're trying to compete against all these ones that at least have a window.
Right. Yeah.
So I suspect that I'm not going to be able to rent that out. So anyway, Mrs. EEV blog, she says no, just move back to the old one. And
back to the dungeon, we'll, David.
Yep. And we'll just bide our time, hoard the cash, and you know, save the money, and we'll if we see one pop up for sale at a bargain basement price, then we might actually upgrade. We might buy a bigger one with a window. And anyway, and sell the old one. So that's the plan. So yeah, that's, you know, there's a lot of big decisions to be made there, you know. Do you spend the extra coin and get something that you like, you know, get something that makes you feel good, or do you, you know, save the cash in these hard times? And I took a poll and it was split about 50-50 down the middle. Half the people said nope, you know,
I mean, you wouldn't actually make a decision based on.
No, I wouldn't. But it's always fun to do. You know, I just yeah, like, yeah, yeah, we all know that the real decision lies with Mrs. EEV. Look, you know,
that's right. That's right.
Yep. So, yeah. So I think I'll just move back to the old place. I don't want to sign up for a new. And the thing is, I own it, right? Mm. Every time I walk in there, I go, like, I effing own this. Like,
yeah, man.
You know, no one can do jack, right? I can do anything I damn well like.
Well, you still have neighbors, so, you know.
Well, yeah, I still have neighbors, you know. So.
Yeah, you still, you gotta do that.
Yeah. But I kind of feel, you know, renting the place, I've rented two different lab/offices now, and it's like, it just doesn't feel the same, you know?
Yeah.
Feels like, oh, you can't touch the walls, you can't, you know, you gotta be careful, you spill something on the carpet, you know, because you'll just have to pay to replace it instead of not caring.
You can't have a huge party and trash the place either.
Yeah, exactly. It's tough. Rockstar style. Yeah.
Well, speaking of signing up for things again, I am actually, I forgot to mention this before the show, but I have once again signed up for things. I have signed up for tutoring again. This is a new topic and new tutors. So I have signed up for that. Basically, I tried something new based on a friend's suggestion, where basically I just posted on Upwork and I posted a job on Upwork to basically show me how to do things.
Yep.
And that's what I'm doing now. It's an interesting idea. I don't know how it's going to work out, but I ended up hiring some two guys out of India to show me some stuff with 3RTOS, and it's been pretty good so far. So
excellent. So did you get flooded with responses, or was it?
Yeah. Have you been on Upwork ever before?
No, I've never. No, I might have taken a look at it, but I've never.
Yeah,
really,
it's interesting. So like, I've talked to some people about like kind of getting started on there, like, you know, get some early work, and you know, you can't charge a huge amount, but. Some people are charging upwards of like $200 an hour on there.
Wow.
And it's interesting is like, it really runs the gamut from like $10 an hour, you know, like if you have I was just looking at the electronics space, but like some people are charging $10 an hour and usually are in, you know, lower cost of living areas. Some people are charging $200 an hour and it's like, it is all over the map. And so it's interesting, 'cause then you get to see, so the first thing that strikes me about it is you go on there and you're like, wow, there's just a lot of talented people out here, just in general, because everybody posts their portfolio, they all post their experience and things like that. And, you know, there's always a little bit of bluster.
Okay, but you can still, like, download their portfolio of stuff, can you? Is it like a PDF or something? What are you?
Some of them have like links to like Google Drive, and some of them just have photos, and some of them have like testimonials. But, you know, in general, it's kind of all over the map, and you can kind of find people in different spaces. And, and so, yeah, seeing like, people doing, you know, some people are, I was mostly looking for firmware as well, so I think it was very specific to that, but some of the people that do firmware also did circuit boards, so, you know, I'd see that in the profile.
Yeah,
but yeah, and like all over the place. So I had like people in I had one in Egypt, two or three from India, one from Pakistan, one from Poland, one from Bosnia.
I'm seeing a trend here, Chris.
What's that?
Well, this is what I've heard, is that this is a race to the bottom. It's pretty much,
totally,
you know,
any marketplace system
lower,
is. Yeah.
Your lower socioeconomic.
Sure, sure. Yeah, you know, not necessarily quality, but definitely, yeah, I think cost of living areas are, yeah, it's.
Yeah.
But I think the other thing too is that, yeah, you wouldn't get on there. I mean, like, if you're trying to charge, if you're like what it really comes down to is marketing, I think, is like, because if you're basically, you're trying to build a brand and you offer these services, you basically are saying that I charge a premium, but I'm worth it because of this, this, and this. And you don't go on a market system where you have all these comparisons against you, right?
Yeah.
So I don't post any work of mine on there.
But you're saying there are premium people on there who actually charge a premium price. But in general, it's a race to the bottom. Is that right?
I think so. I mean, I think really you could... I think I was looking for that because I was looking for like affordable tutoring, because I'm looking for stuff that's like at the beginning of the process, right? So it could have just been that I was looking for, you know, simple enough stuff that, yeah, then people.
Right. You didn't need a premium 30-year guru in RTOS.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly. Right. If you were like, hey, I need to do like, a 20 gigahertz design. I mean, first off, you might not find anyone on Upwork, but you might find someone that's, you know, charging $200-$250 an hour or something like that. So
yeah,
it really is, you know, dependent on what you need to do, I think, as well.
Right. Oh, no, so, totally. Yeah. Is there, so what are the main platforms for this? Are there other platforms that do the same thing? I mean, there's, you know, Fiverr and stuff like that. Is that the same thing?
So Fiverr is, when I think about Fiverr, it's more like a preset. It's like a prefix menu, like a prefix
pre-canned
menu.
It's like, exactly. I will design your logo for $20, you know, kind of thing.
Yeah. And right, like, and then it's basically, it's because it's like a bid proposal, you try and get as much out of it as you can, but you have pretty low expectations. Really, you know, if you really want to have lots of
low expectations on Fiverr.
Well, I mean, you won't have like, even you won't
it's,
have that
it's
many
right
revisions.
In the name. Like it's right in the name. Right. Okay. It's $5, and, you know.
And so I've used Fiverr before and I was pretty underwhelmed, you know, like, right, because it's just, so I was doing like, I tried to get like an animation for like a stream, you know, like that's, I thought that was pretty straight ahead. That's,
oh yeah. And of course that's pretty straightforward to get. Yeah.
And I, you know, I tried lowballing and it just, you know, and I even did like then in like an, what they really do is then they do upgrades on there on Fiverr. So you might like go and say, I want a logo, but oh, actually I want three logos to choose from.
Yeah.
And it's like,
right.
And it costs, you know, and then that's another $20 and you know, whatever.
Yeah. It adds up. Yeah.
Yeah. It's basically, it's just, there's just people trying to churn through the low end work and then trying to like upsell on other stuff. And then on Fiverr too, it's like, do you want to leave a tip for your person? The person that did this work for you? It's like, oh, that's, I did not expect that. So.
Right. Okay. They hit you that at the end, do they?
Yeah. And I think anyways, I would rather just hire someone hourly, but the hard thing is always like the reason that you really want to hire someone is because you know they're going to get done the right the first time. And, and that, you know, you have confidence that it's competent work, and it's almost just impossible to do that from a market system, right? You can't possibly prove yourself well enough on a market system. Whereas if, you know, if someone recommends a consultant to me to do some work for me, I'm like, oh, well, they've done this specific
thing. They've done
this
for Joe Blogs. So
yeah, exactly. For a friend. Well, like say you suggested someone to me, it's like, oh, they've done this work for Dave. He vouches for them. He's seen their work. He's worked with them. He knows that they're easy to work with and that they're efficient, all these other things. And it's just like, there's that human element that's really, really hard, I think, to replicate on a marketplace system.
Mm-hmm.
That all said, I've been giving it a shot. I mean, someone's got to give a shot at some point. So the guys that I'm giving a shot to have been very good so far.
Excellent.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah. We'll see.
No, that's something that I want to get into as well. Mm-hmm. Like I want to, you know, hire people to do similar kind of things and, you know, and possibly even teach me to do stuff as well. So I might be looking for similar things, and hence why, you know, I think it's better to hoard the cash, you know, so that I have money in the business to do this sort of thing, you know, so I can spend money on services like this.
Yeah. I think the thing that was most exciting, I really started to think about it like, okay, so, you know, you can effectively learn anything, like, and this has been really has come to the forefront for my style specifically. Like, so I've been looking at this free RTOS code, and these two guys that are helping me out, basically them just like walking through examples with me for something.
Hang on,
it just like unlocks.
Two guys,
unlocks
are you?
Oh,
sorry. Wait, why is there two? Are you hedging your bets? That one's,
yeah,
you know,
totally. Yeah.
If one sucks, okay, right.
Yeah, I actually had three, and the first one. Actually, one already fell off because they said they were an individual, but they're actually like there was a project manager, and it was like a group of four. And it's like, I just want to deal with the individual that I'm talking to.
Right. Oh, of course. No, yeah, you don't want to. They're obviously some service farm or something. There's
exactly.
You know,
well, I mean, yeah.
For
I mean,
want of a better term.
Yeah. I mean, I'd say like a professional group would be the nice way to say it, right?
Okay.
And it's like, and it was like, I was talking to the project manager and he's like, yeah, we have two hardware guys, or sorry, one hardware person, two firmware people, and like an Android app developer. And from that perspective, like, I actually like really get it. Like, can you imagine like going to a group like that and being, and not having any like experience in hardware or anything and just being like,
yes. And then they've got somebody to do the job, but yeah, you're going to us. Yeah. It's a different thing to what you want. You just want to deal with an individual. You want all the money to go to the individual.
That's right.
And you want to deal with the individual. You just don't want any fluff.
That's right. No. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I want like direct experience. That's the other thing too. Like, I want a direct experience in free RTOS on NRF52, right? That's what I was specifically looking for. And that's what I ended up getting, which is.
And you found someone. That's pretty specific, right?
I mean, no, I found people that were like, you know, multiple years of experience just doing that. Like based on, and like some of the jobs are listed on their profile as having like, hey, you know, this guy had done this job for me using FreeRTOS on an NRF52. So like that, from that perspective, that is the benefit of a marketplace system, right?
Oh, of course. Yeah. See, I would have thought, I would have guessed if you said to me, I'm going to go to WeWork and I'm going to find someone who does free RTOS and are, you know, on this chip. And I go, nah, the odds of finding that are zip.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's pretty popular, but yeah, I mean, yeah, you're right. It is very specific.
Yep.
But yeah, so like I started like thinking about it, like, man, like think of all the things you could learn, especially because them just kind of like working me through this stuff. And I think I have to have a very specific expectation on like, you know, how they teach. But yeah, in terms of like me being able to just ask questions, like it's almost like, you know, having like a really intelligent Google, right? But it's just that person with their experience.
Yes.
You know, just hiring a piano teacher anyways, right? Like most of the time when I had a piano teacher, I've talked about this when I hired firmware people last time, it worked out really well, I think too, because it was like, I ran into a problem and I wanted like build up my questions over the week and then talk to them on my weekly sessions and like just get all the questions out. And sometimes that question list goes away because I find the answer some other way or whatever, but having that as a backstop, it like is really good for my learning style.
The thing here is, though, is that just because somebody is brilliant at doing a job does not mean they can teach it, even that if they correct. Think yeah. they can, right? They, yep, oh, totally. Yeah, I can teach you this. Look, oh, no worries, you know. Mm-hmm. I'll teach you this in 10 minutes. And it's like, no, they're just shit at teaching. They just, like, it's a specific skill. You know, there's nothing wrong, like, with somebody who can't teach. That's fine. You know, you could be the most brilliant person in the world, right? But you can't teach. You could be Einstein, but if you're not a good teacher, you know, then that's it doesn't automatically translate.
I think that's on the learner, and I think I have a little advantage in this way because I've read a lot of books about education theory, and like, you know, like I teach others and I think that like I have very specific stuff where I want to do it. Like if someone was just like, I'm just gonna talk at you for an hour, that's not gonna help me. Specifically my learning style. But because I know my learning style, because I know like I need to have hands-on examples. No one's surprised by this. I need to have hands-on examples. I need to have need to be able to ask directed questions after the fact. And I think it's
you've almost got to try. If you can't, like, it's I'd say it's reasonably rare to find somebody who a teacher who can actually read understand naturally what you want. They can get a gist for what you want and what you're, it's, you know, as they go along, how to tailor it to your specific circumstance. So I think that's particularly rare. So it probably falls upon the student to actually have that skill to try and extract it out of them, rather than, you know, you can't just assume that they're going to be good at giving you what you want. You've got to extract it out.
I agree. Yeah, I think, and the other thing too is like breaking down, you know, like when you really get into like skills and things like that too, like breaking things down into like component parts, that's also very difficult.
Mm-hmm.
And again, like that's what the best teachers do. They recognize like, oh, Chris is always having problems with this type of, you know, C code. And like, I should really go and like assign him some drills around that so that he can, and then like, you know, structuring drills. And that's really like the best parts of like educational theory, I think. Not the best parts, but like that is a key element. And I think that's, the piece where a lot of people would just be like, oh, well, you suck at this thing. You should not suck at this anymore. Okay.
And it can work both ways. It can work because it can work because the teacher sucks, or it can be work because the student sucks at, you know, it's sort of all both, you know?
Yeah.
I wouldn't assume if you're, you know, thinking about doing this sort of stuff that you're going to have a positive result like Chris has. So,
well, maybe. Yeah. I mean, I think it's worth trying.
Yeah. Oh, no, it's certainly worth trying, but don't be surprised if, you know, somebody doesn't give you exactly what you want.
Yeah. I think the other thing that's been interesting about this experience specifically is that like both the first time I did this, you know, however many months ago that was, and I guess probably it was like almost a year ago now. And then this time was even better because the first time I did, I put out a call like, hey, I think I want to get some tutoring help. And like all these people were very, very nice. And they said, oh, I want to, you don't have to pay for it. You know, I'll just show you some things. And I want a very specific skin in the game, paid contract kind of thing. Yep. I want it to be like a piano lesson. I show up, we go through things, I leave, I give you money when I leave. You know what I mean? Like it needs to be like very transactional.
Yep.
And it has to be like very regular, I think, as well. That, again, just for my style. And I think being able to like have, there's been no marketplace for this sort of thing. And it's basically, I'm just kind of bending the marketplace, really, which is for work. I get that. Like people, you know, want full-time work And I get that, but it's basically bending that market towards a more learning bent kind of thing. And I think that's kind of interesting. Yeah. But I'm curious for you, Dave, what are you looking to learn?
Well, we'll get onto that in a minute.
Okay.
I just want to extend on that point there. I've maintaining my forum, for example. You know, I've got a penguin nerd who maintains mm-hmm. my websites and my servers and my forum and, you know, everything else for me. And he was doing that just because he's a fan and he's a user of the forum, right? He's been mm-hmm. doing that for Nick's, right? Yeah. And I thought, you know, I eventually I should be paying him to do this, mm-hmm. right? Because yeah, that's right. actually his professional job. He's actually doing, you know, he's maintaining servers and things like that. So I contacted him a couple of months back and I said, hey, you know, look, I really should be, you know, I'd feel better if I was paying you for this, you yeah. know? So it's more, you know, like, and as you know, a similar sort of situation. You said, oh, you had people offer to, you know, help you out for free. It's like, thanks, you know, but yeah. you wanted it more, sort of
I think you want a lever to pull, you want a knob to turn, like you want to be able to have something where if you have no monetary exchange, you have no power in the transaction, right?
Yes, exactly. And I felt guilty, like the forum falls over at midnight, you know, I feel guilty, mm-hmm. you know, contacting and say, hey, you know, the forum's falling over. It's like So I ended up, you know, and he said, no, look, I'm happy. Are you happy to still do it, you know, for free and stuff like that? And said, no, look, I really want to pay, you know.
Yeah. Good.
So, yeah. So I'm paying someone.
I think that kind of like transactional thing too. I think it's changed my outlook on, I think it's also because like I'm getting paid by the hour now too. And like I specifically because of that. So,
yeah, exactly. Changes things.
Yeah.
This contracting gig, huh?
Yeah. So, okay, Dave, come on. What are you going to learn? I want to know.
There's all sorts of things. I want to learn CAD. I want to learn mechanical CAD.
Oh, mechanical.
Mechanical CAD. That's one of the things I want to learn.
I think that's actually a really good one to start with too, because there's a very clear difference, right, in that case. And you could say the same thing for my stuff too. There are tons of tutorials out there, right? And you could go and follow those tutorials. However, that's a very different experience, I think. Like so people would say, well, why wouldn't you just go use the tutorial? But that's a different experience, I think.
I can imagine it is. Yeah. Rather than sitting on a Skype call, sharing a desktop with someone, talking in real time mm-hmm. and going, oh, why did you go? Oh, is this option up here? Oh, can you do it this way? And they'll go, no, and they'll mm-hmm. explain why. And it's like, that's just like, you can't beat that instant feedback.
Right. And there's literally things that in there that you could not Google for if you tried your entire life. You could spend every waking second trying to figure out how to Google for like, why does a fillet need to be this, you know, like this minimum radius or something silly like that, right?
Right.
But you can just literally ask in that case. Yeah.
And you can have the response back in seconds, you know.
Yep.
It's just, there's no beating that. So, mm-hmm. It's well worth paying for.
What else? Come on.
What?
Okay. I wish I could learn. So I've been trying to figure this out. I wish I could get better. Maybe not. I don't need it. Maybe I don't need a tutor. I really liked a tutor, but like I want to get better at applying solder paste. And I've thought actually I'd really like a low cost solder paste application machine using a standard stencil.
I posted on my forum a couple of months back.
Did you really?
Does anyone know about like a lowish cost? Yeah. You know, automated, you know,
the squeegee robot.
You know, the thing with the pedal and the pump, right? You know, it's got a pedal like on the floor. So, you know, one of those and it, you know, it comes up and it dispenses your, and it gives you a set amount of solder paste each time, or you can dial in how much solder paste you want. And it'll,
okay, so you're saying syringe method. You're saying like that.
Yes. Yes. Oh, okay. What one were you talking?
I was talking about squeegeeing very, you know, like how, like when you send it off to a full panel off to an assembly house,
they
have the machine that squeegees like robotically.
The squeegee. I've got videos of that. Yeah.
Exactly. And it's like, we'll link that into it. It's super conformal, not conformal. It's super
consistent,
like level. Yeah. Consistent. That's it. And
yes.
I suck at that.
But you can't adjust. The only way you can adjust that is to literally adjust the thickness of the stencil and or the aperture opening, right?
Uh-huh. This is not those problems, though. The problem is that it's the fixturing. That's the problem. Like, so the fixturing.
Well, you tape it down.
I know. I suck at that, apparently. So this is, I think part of the problem is, and maybe the part of the problem is, I continue to order, I keep getting scared of frameless stencils because I've sliced my fingers so badly so many times on the stainless. So I started just ordering the frame stencils. Then there's a at M Hub.
But they're harder to use because they're like they've got frames on them, and it's like the frameless ones are easier because all you do, I'm going to get a video showing this, you just get some blank PCB scraps which forms an L-shaped thing and you wedge your board in there. So it's the same thickness, and then you wedge your board in, you tape it all down, and then you tape your stencil on top because then it's all, because you don't want it going over the edge, stencil going over the edges of the board because then it bows up. Right. Yep. So you want it, you want it all flat, and then you tape it all down, and then you swipe it across with your little plastic squidgy credit card or your little, you know.
Yeah, I know. I want the frames to be better. I want the framed ones to be better. I guess maybe that's the real problem, is that I keep getting the framed ones, but like for those, I still.
Yeah, but they're
like,
so big and unwieldy.
I mean, they're made for machines, right? I want like a low cost machine.
They're made for the big machine. Oh no, you don't want it. No, you don't want to go that far.
Well, I have a machine. So at M Hub, they have like, not a machine. It's just like literally just the counterweighted like thing that basically you clamp it in, and then it, you know, it kind of like levers down over top of the boards.
Right.
And I keep trying that, but like, yeah. So maybe the real answer here is Chris should just use a frameless stencil. But
yes, yeah, that would be my advice. Frameless stencil, and just have a dedicated bunch of, you know, PCBs on a board that you can just put away when you're not using a hard board, when you're not using it, and then tape it all down. And it really is quite easy. But yeah, you've got to do it. You can't do it half-assed. As I said, you can't just put your board on your bench and, you know, stick it down with a bit of blue tack or something and tape, and then put your stencil over top of that, because it just bows off the edges. You've got to have a nice thing that keeps it all completely flat. Otherwise, you get a bleed, you know, if there's any bow at all in your stencil, then you'll get the paste going underneath, and it just. Ugh.
I just wish it was all easier. That's what I'm really trying to say, Dave. I just want it to be.
Well, it's,
you know, there is a solder paste printer. I want that.
Oh yeah, yeah. Oh, they're very really nice. The solder paste dispensing machines. Yeah, I think you can get one for like 10 grand or something.
Okay. Yeah.
You know, it's but they're very slow. Like they're designed for like, you know, 1,000 pin BGA rework type things, you know, where you need to do 1,000 dots and you don't want to do a custom stencil for it. So you just do program it in, or shove your Gerbers in there, and it, you know, solder paste your, you know, and then it just dispenses. It's an XY table which goes around and then just dispenses a set amount on each pad. And it's like, it's very flexible, but it's very slow. It takes ages. So it's not, you know, it's good for like one-off prototypes and things, but apart from that, useless.
You wouldn't use it on a production level.
No, or even small volume production, like 10, you know, if you're doing 10 boards, it's like, you know, So that's not really a thing. I don't think you'll find anyone with their own automated solder paste dispensing machine, like XY table dispensing machine. Yeah. It's just, because it is easy. Using solder paste stencils is easy, but you've just got to go to the effort to have like a dedicated board set up that does the job. You know,
I think maybe what I really need to do is to start taping the edge of my stencils so that I don't slice my finger open, because I have really sliced the crap out of my, it wasn't even my finger, it was my hand. It like
pay
cut
attention.
Into my hand. Oh, it was terrible.
Come on, you're not in kindy anymore.
It was just how they were sitting in like my roll around cart at work, and like, I just slammed right into it and slice.
Oh dear, oh dear.
Yeah.
Anyway. Yep. All right. Can we talk about lost information?
Sure.
Because, come on, that was excitement, Chris. A little bit more excitement.
Dave, let's talk about lost information. Why the hell aren't we talking about it already? Come on.
We got sidetracked on bloody learning again, didn't we? Other stuff.
Yeah, damn it. How are we talking about learning?
We just recycle the same stuff. Anyway, the sheer volume of lost information out there hit home the other day when I thought, hey, there's this old 1980s circuit textbook.
Finally, I know what you're talking about. Yeah.
Sorry. Oh, you do? Okay, right. I thought we discussed this briefly before
the
show.
Yeah, my brain. Yeah.
All right.
Okay. Anyways, go ahead. Sorry.
Anyway. This was brought home to me by there's this 80s textbook, you know, circuit design textbook out there, which has been out of print since the late 80s, right? And I thought, hey, you know, and I sort of had a look around for it. I couldn't find it anywhere. Like I have a physical copy of it, right? Sure. And I couldn't find it anywhere. There's no PDFs. There's no nothing, right? There's the odd reference to it. You can't even get like a screenshot of the the front cover, right? There's absolutely nothing out there.
I equated it to like when a record company decides not to put a vinyl album onto the they don't digitize it, and then you just
It's stuck in the vinyl world forever.
That's right.
There's
it's hipster fodder, Dave. It's hipster fodder.
Right. There's 10,000 copies out there, but they're in basement
drawers.
As
long as they last,
right?
You know, gone, yeah. There till they're gone.
Anyway, so I thought, hey, you know, it'd be cool if I like maybe could get rights in, because I kind of liked it. So, and I thought it'd be a good basis for a textbook that I could, hey, maybe I could like get rights to republish that and let like and then add on to it and extend it and actually publish a textbook, you know?
Yeah.
Actually published a book. So I contacted I tried to find the author, could not find the author anywhere. Right, couldn't find any information. I spent some time on it, and so I contacted the publisher, and they're around still, an Australian publisher. I contacted them, and they said, "We don't know anything about this." It's like, huh? It's like this was 30 years ago, 35 years ago. We don't. Yeah. I'm sorry, but try and find the author. You know, so I spent more time finding. I finally found the author. I was thrilled, and. Then I went, I found some information on another book he published, which had his age in there. He was born in 1930. And it was like, okay, I'm doing the running the numbers in my head. If he's still around, he's 90, right?
Yeah.
Anyway, I finally found, he lives here in Sydney, right? And I finally found his address, and I found a phone number. So I went, damn it, I'm going to cut, like, and it's a retirement, you know, it's like a retirement place, you know? And so I thought, oh, bugger it, I'll call this up. And I called up the number, and it was him. I got
That's
him.
Great.
He's still here. And I finally found him. And yep, he's 90 years old. And anyway, absolutely fantastic.
So what's his backstory?
Oh, backstory is, old engineer, used to teach electronics here in Sydney. And he's a former teacher, and he wrote this textbook way back in the 80s. Since then, he's gone on to write a few alternative physics books, let's say. You know, he's gotten into, you know, like, yeah, like I'm going to prove there's, you know, like Einstein was wrong kind of, you know, thing or something, something like that, you know. Anyway, he's got some theory and he's published some other book about, alternative physics that explains.
Alternative physics.
Yeah.
All right.
You know.
There is an ether.
Well, he's got he's got some new theory about. Anyway, I don't know exact details, but I thought that was funny.
Well, yeah, the circuit book sounds good. So let's just stick on that.
Anyway, the circuit. And so I talked to him and he said, oh, yeah, they actually contracted me to actually write that book. The publishing company contracted him to write it, but technically he still holds the copyright, but they hold the publishing rights. And then there's probably, there's a person who did the illustrations. They were probably contracted by, they'd hold copyright on those. Right. And then they were contracted by the publishing company. And so anyway, so he said, oh, look, sorry, I can't really do anything for you. You're going to have to, you know, talk to the publishing company, really. They're the ones who probably like have republishing rights or whatever still, you know. So I went back to them and I gave them all the contact details, and they said, look, it's so old. We have like no idea if we'd have any of the original information, and really they didn't even know who to contact within the company who would even know if they still had the old files or knew anything about the contract that they signed with him or anything.
Right. Do
like
they even
that.
Have so the paper, the literal do, paper that is still there?
Yeah. Or, you know, back in what was in mid 85? I know you weren't even born then, were you?
So, I was born then, yes.
Oh, you
I
were born then, but was, yeah. Anyway,
yeah,
you were just
not very conscious.
Not very computer literate back then.
That's right. Yes.
Yeah. Anyway, so it would have been like maybe WordStar. Maybe on DOS. Perhaps.
Oh, because it was actually a publishing program like that. It wasn't like a traditional layout or anything like that. Like typeset or something like that, you know?
Well, yeah, how they do, well, typeset. No, it says in the book, actually, it says typeset in Times, English Times or something. So maybe it was, you know, I like how, what format would all the drawings have been in? How would they have, would they have used a desktop, would even desktop publishing programs around then? Like, you know, barely.
Right. Would they have gone to a, you know, a publishing company for EE textbooks as well? Like,
Oh, it's just.
Are the drawings are hand-drawn or are they what?
No, no. They look computer, you know, drafted. Okay. You know, so yeah, they just like, they just threw their hands up and went, look, you know, sorry, like too hard. Let's just not go there. And then they said, look, if you want to publish a book, we'll just like, let's start from scratch. So yeah. So yes, I am thinking about writing a textbook from scratch now. So there you go.
Oh, geez. Well, anyway. There you go. That's how it happens, I suppose. Yeah.
Yeah, that's how it happens, you know. So yeah, I'm a bit excited about that now. So anyway, but that's lost information, right? How many things that weren't, you know, we used to, okay, if it doesn't turn up in Google, it doesn't exist.
Mm, yeah.
Right? It's like.
Have you ever worked at a company that had, well, I'm sure you have, but like the. You know, you go back and back and back in like the PLM or like the system that has like all the digitalized digital drawings. And at a certain point, you're like, oh, all these are just scanned. There's nothing. You know, like, and then sometimes it's just a reference to a file cabinet. And you're like, oh, okay, I guess I'm going into the cabinets.
Dude, like, I'm serious. Yeah. that was half of my career.
That was it, huh? Yeah, right.
Look, it wasn't that long ago. I'm talking early 2000s, right? Within the last 20 years, I've worked at big military companies who, we had these, like everything was done on these A3 size graph sheets, right? Mm-hmm. Hand drawn on these A3, you know, and you would stick things in. So you'd do things on computers, right? So you'd like, you know, you draw your circuits and everything, but you would you'd print them out and then you would stick them, you would glue them onto these graph sheets, which all had, you know, numbered, and it was all like a Dewey decimal
like a lab
system,
notebook,
but they.
But like a.
No. These were giant project folders, right? So a project had these dedicated folders. Each section, you know, each subsection would have its own folder and things like that. And you would have to put all the original information. And then we had archivist people whose job was to actually duplicate those. So you had a master set of documents. And of folders, and then you would have the duplicate set. So if you just wanted to go look something up and maybe, you know, have a play with it, take it back to your desk or whatever, you would get the duplicate set because the master set is the master set. You know, it's like, you know, you don't touch the master set unless you put in new information into it, right? And then the archivists would keep these copies up to date, right? And different teams would have their own copies of all these. Like dozens of these huge A3 size. I don't know what that is in you weird Yankee format. But,
probably tabloid, you know, like 11 by 17 or similar.
Tabloid,
like
what's 17 sounds right, yeah.
Yeah. Large what's the A3 actual size, do you know?
I don't know.
It's like
know
two A2s, right? Is that how it goes?
It's half an A2.
Half an A2. Oh, A2 equals size.
Two A3s equals an A2.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, then that's probably the size of an 8.5 by 11. Then if that's right. A2 is probably like a tabloid. And it's a stupid.
Yeah,
system.
I forget the exact size. Anyway, yeah, it's larger than it's double the size of a standard, you know, A4, sheet. Anyway, so yeah, these large folders and everything. This was within the last 20 years. This is in the 2000s. Right, we still had this. Yeah. Even though everything, did stuff on computer, it would ultimately be archived and stored in physical form in these binders.
Yeah,
because that's just the system they had.
You're not saying it's just because it's a military contract. You're saying it's because they just needed paper records for some reason.
Oh, they needed paper records, and that's how they've always done it. And that was probably how they're audited when the military come around and audit.
Yeah,
you know, doing things right. You know, you got to show them that you have all the project folders, and if there anything's secret, they would go in the cabinet. They would go in the lock cabinets. You know, if anything was classified secret or whatever. You know, it's all.
I have an acquaintance who works in a military program. And he actually works in one of those rooms where like no document leaves the room. You want to work on a document?
Yeah.
You have to be in the room to work on the document. And there's like four computers in there. And I was like, oh, it's like the room in the first Mission Impossible, you know, where the like the floor changes color.
Yep.
And he's like, it's pretty much like
gaps,
that actually.
Yep. It's all. Yeah.
That's pretty cool. And kind of that sounds like terrible. But I bet you get a lot of work done like that. Like there's no checking your phone. There's no checking the, you know,
there's
email.
No distractions. Just, no, there's no the windows hole, to look out of. There's no,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah, exactly. Yep. See, there you go, Dave. That's why you got to go back to the windowless.
I know.
Lab.
No, I was just about to say, that's why I have to go back to the old lab. There's no window. I'm looking out the window right now. I'm just staring out the window. You
I know,
watching
right?
The
wasted
cars
time,
go by.
Man. Wasted time.
You know, wait, totally wasted seconds there.
Right.
Yep. Seconds of productive time that I could be writing my textbook, you know.
That's right. Yeah. Oh boy. It'll be interesting to hear if you go through with that. That's not something I would. Yeah. I'd say start with a short one, you know, start with a short one.
Yeah, right.
Work your way up to it. Yeah.
See, this is why I thought, you know, I could cheat the system. I could take an existing one, which I thought was okay. And then, you know, which is out of print and nobody cares about anymore. And I can sort of extend that and build on that. You
breathe
know,
new life into it. As
yeah,
it
exactly. You know, that'd give me the jump start. Oh, right. Look, I'm 50% finished because I just, right off the bat, that would have been nice. But lost information. So, yeah, like if I went back to that company now, I reckon they wouldn't have scanned in any of that.
Mm. Oh, yeah. Like they wouldn't have scanned it to, yeah.
No, if you would have to go back, you know, and you would have to go back and physically. I'm sure that, like, they would not have tossed those out, definitely. Like, they would still be, like, archived properly, but you could, and you could get them. But, yeah, I mean, they're just physical paper copies.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's it. They're the master copies. Yeah. Glue and scissors were my two main tools at that company. You know, I'm not. Yep. Seriously. It was just, yep.
Well, speaking of military companies, we have a link on the show notes today about SBIR and you hadn't heard of it before. And it's kind of interesting. It's a very sensationalized title called How to Access the America Seed Fund, the $3 billion SBIR program. But you'd never heard of SBIR before.
No. What's the stand for?
Small Business Innovation Research. And basically, there's a mandate somewhere in government code for the U.S. that basically some amount of research can't just go to big military contractors or you know, large contractors in general. It has to actually go to a small business. And then I think there's also some regulations, too, to try and, you know, minority-owned, women-owned businesses as well, veteran-owned businesses. So it basically helps to spread R&D money to companies that wouldn't get a shot
otherwise.
Smaller
companies, yeah. That's a really good idea. That's actually really good. Although $3 billion is a drop in the bucket compared to what...
Exactly, you know? Right. But it's a big deal to small companies, but it's not a big deal to like the big companies. Yeah. And it's the first time I'd heard about this. I actually brought it up on the show before, but it was the first technical conference I'd ever gone to. Like I came to Chicago for the Sensors Conference. It was like ESC and the Sensors Conference was here. They used to have a Chicago version. And I got on a bus from Cleveland. I paid for it all myself. And I, you know, pretended the Amp Hour was enough of a journalistic enterprise. And they're like, like a podcast, huh? Okay, well, can you show us your traffic? I'm like, okay. And they're like, yeah.
Oh, really? You had to show them your traffic. Wow.
Yeah. Well, it's fine, whatever. And then they gave me a free pass and I got to go in. And so one of the Sensor Expo things, I remember sitting in this presentation, and it was a guy who was doing, I think it was like 802.15.4, you know, sensors, but they were stress sensors on the rotors of a helicopter. So these things actually whipped around at the, you know, helicopter frequency, and then they transmitted back the actual stress on the helicopter. And the guy was talking about how, like, this is an SBIR grant, and, you know, these are like Apache Tomahawk helicopters or something like that. And I was just like, that is so cool. First off, you would never think to have that yourself anyways. You never I guess I'll just look at carbon fiber stress and strain on a Apache helicopter, you know, the rotor. And then also the fact that it was funded. Yeah, like that's like super cool in both directions. So that was my first exposure to it. And then I started asking around about it. And I think it was Greg Charvat who told me the best way to do it is to get as a subcontractor on another SBIR grant, right? Because it's so hard to get your foot in the door. Once you get one, you'll start to get more, but that first one is really, really hard to do. And if you can be a subcontractor, first off, you work with someone who already knows what they're doing, but then also I think you can refer to that in future ones and saying, I was a sub on SBIR 1234567, whatever the number is.
And you've got your bona fides.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yep. Nice.
And so then there's different phases, pretty standard kind of like development process, basically phase 1, 2, 3. And basically, let's see, it's awards range from tens of thousands to over $200,000. And it's like a short proof of concept. And then there's like a 2-year period, like a longer. And then finally phase 3 is like actually making it in mass production. And, you know, it's not just military either. There's also like NIH grants. There's, I think some of them go through there, like the Institutes of Health and similar, like, you know, it's usually technology focused and it's hard, but you can go and actually look up what's on there. NASA, NOAA, the Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, DOE, Energy. So like there's tons of really cool things on there. And some of them are so specific that it'll like, it'll knock your socks off. So
NIST is on there. NIST.
Yeah. The Institutes of Standards and
National
Technology.
National Institute of Standards. Mm.
Yeah.
Oh, it's closed. Like the... Oh. Boo-hoo. 2020 phase one. Well, 2020 is half over, I guess. So
yeah, there was a like a clearing site that I remember looking at one point. It was like a .gov site, and like you can just like scroll down it. Oh yeah, SBIR.gov, and you can just like scroll down all of the opportunities that are on there, and like there is some wonky stuff out there. So it's fun to go look at, and usually you need to have like a pretty sizable team too. So it's definitely.
But be careful, it's what you want to, like, don't just go for the money grab. Be careful it's something that you do actually want to do and can, you know, do. Because I actually thought about applying for a grant once. It was a video, like a film, film industry grant.
Oh, okay.
And it was, you know, anyone who wants to do some sort of documentary type thing. So I thought, you know, so I discussed it with Cole von Moller, who does these state of electronics. He's a filmmaker, right?
That's right.
So I thought, hey, you know, maybe we could team up. We could, because he's a professional filmmaker, so he's got the bona fides to, you know, I just make crappy YouTube videos.
Right.
And you know, and we discussed actually going around the country, actually doing some sort of, we didn't really have an idea, but some sort of documentary on the electronics industry or the, I don't know, engineering industry or something, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So, we thought about doing this and then we sort of realized, okay, if we get our $150,000, shit, we're going to actually have to do this, which means we both have to like take time off, travel around the country, which would be fun, right? But we've both got families, we've both got other commitments, right? We can't just like, and then in the end we realized, oh shit, no, it's like, it's 6 to 9 months, you know, full-time work or something to do all this. And like, and we just can't do it, even if we got the grant, right?
Right.
So, you know, it's just like, yeah, it'd be fun, but like, it's just not practical. So we sort of, went, nah. So, yeah, bummer. So just be careful what you wish for, I guess, you know.
Sure.
Then you might have to go through with it.
Yeah, the I was trying to think of other people who have done this before. So Zach Fredin and Joe Berto, who did the NeuroTinker, episode 330. He also got an SBIR, and he did like educational. So basically they did like a neuron toy basically for educational toy. And so that was cool. And I think that was on an educational grant. And then I think Michael Osman as well. I think the HackRF one, or maybe the Ubertooth one, one of those I think was also on a SBR grant. Yeah. It's just kind of cool because it is these kind of open, sometimes they're kind of open, like, and,
well, that was going to be my question. Like, because this is public funding, right? Do the results of the, you know, the research or the thing, like, can you use it for commercial purposes, or do you have to be, or does it have to be published open? You know, can you do all the thing and then keep it a secret and then become a billionaire?
No, I don't think you can keep it a secret and become a billionaire. You probably could become a billionaire, but I think it's usually, I think you retain the rights to the actual invention and things like that. You can file patents against it. I could be wrong about that.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah.
Right.
But I'm pretty sure you retain the rights, but I think they have exclusive contract to it for a certain amount of time.
Okay. Got it.
And
yep.
So basically that you have to provide it for the entity that, you know, is funding you, of course, but then I think you can then spin it off.
Right. So if they, you give them first rights, and then they probably, if they turn it, I would be guessing if they turn it down, then you're free to go elsewhere. Or
yeah, I'm not
it's
sure.
the famous
I'm not sure.
Apple thing. Like it's the famous, you know, Steve Jobs worked at HP, and his contract at Hewlett Packard, he worked in the calculator department at HP, actually designing calculator chips, and his contract with Hewlett Packard said that every you know, that he has to give them first rights to ideas that he comes up with, right? Of course, he had designed the Apple One, right? And then he realized, oh crap, we can't just go make this. I have to give the first rights to Hewlett Packard. So he took in his Apple One into Hewlett Packard and put it on the desk in front of him and said, this is my computer that I invented. Do you want this? And he was secretly hoping they'd say no. And they went, nah. Fine, you go away. You know, and he went, yes. So, yep. HP actually, yeah, they turned down the Apple One. But he legally had to give them first rights. So maybe similar sort of thing.
Yeah, perhaps. Maybe. I'm not sure. Mm. Yeah, so I would recommend, I think it's interesting just to kind of go and browse through the SBIR.gov just to see what, kind of see what's out there too, like see what people are looking for.
Right.
Yeah. So it's kind of cool. And it could be a good way to fund research for your company. Usually it's going to be, you know, you're going to have a company first. It's not like you're going to, most people aren't forming companies and then building this stuff. So.
Right. So can you approach them with
a proposal?
Far out there idea, or is there a list of stuff they want done?
Yeah, the list of stuff is like the SBIR.gov.
Oh, right. Okay. So there's specific things. So you can't write. So you can't do
some of them
something
are more open-ended though. Right. Oh, okay. Right. So like Zach and Joe, they did one where it was like, I think on a pretty open, like STEM education. Right. And so they got funded through that. And then, that was another thing. So I remember Zach said that there was limitations on how much they could then pay their subcontractors as well. And I think there are some pretty stringent standards there. So you can't like go and, I think the reason they have those standards is because, you know, someone wins a grant and they go and hire a contractor
for
the other direction, the other direction. Oh. So like they hire their friend for $500 an hour and they're like, we're out of money now. You know?
Okay.
So there's cap on how much they could pay for contractors as well.
Got it. So you don't rot the system.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Rotting the system is only allowed for the big boys.
That's right. Exactly. You got to really become a military contractor in order to really.
Yeah, but before you can rot the system properly legally. Yeah. Yes, you can't. No. Small fry, not allowed.
No, please come back, sir, when you have 1,000 employees and, you know, many large buildings.
And you've greased a few politicians and, you know. Oh, boy.
Yeah.
And we aren't even joking. Like, it's that sort of stuff exists.
Out of our pay grade. How about that?
Yep. Yes, the old $800 hammer, you know, and $500 toilet seat. Yeah, the golden toilet seats. Yeah. Oh, boy.
One of my good buddies, I think I mentioned him on the show, he's a purchasing agent for a large contract. I wish he could come and talk. He would just never come and talk about it here,
Oh, God.
I get to hear a lot of great stories, and it's awesome. Yeah.
Can we have one example, please, Chris?
No, I can't. I really can't. No, sorry.
The $200 resistor, you know.
Yeah,
come on.
Right.
We need it. Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's special. It's, you know, it was.
I think you and I probably have enough stories like that, too, though. Like, I mean, the $900 connector that I used to use for, you know, for connecting to military radios. And, you know, like, I'm sure you did, too. You know, like, it's just.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, but they were all, like, even though, $1,000 connector, sure. But. These were like custom designed and custom made for us.
How do you know the toilet and this hammer and the toilet seat and the hammer weren't custom, Dave? Come on.
Oh, well, you know, it's true. Yep. Yeah, because an ordinary hammer just wouldn't have worked, you know.
Right,
so you had to go fully custom. Yep. It's just, geez, you know. No, so I don't think I've actually encountered rorting like that. I don't think it's ever happened at the level that I've ever worked at.
Hmm. Okay. Hmm. Well, that's good. That's good. Something to look forward to.
Yeah. No, because like everything, because the stuff we were doing, everything had to be custom, right? Mm. So there was always a massive premium for that. So, you know, you couldn't use an off the shelf connector for this and that, and, you know, for various like reasons that have to be, the product's very specific, you know, it's not something that, you know, you use on your desk. You know, it's
Let's get to a couple other links before we cut off here. This one is just purely awesome, but there's a new YouTube channel that I found, and and it has really cool videos. And this one is specifically, it's called Fully Charged Show, and it's like a podcast about, or like a video channel about like electric
it's
vehicles.
Not new. It's been going for years. It's hosted by what's his name?
Sorry, I don't know.
What's Lellen? Apparently, he's like he's been on. Was he on Red Dwarf or something? He was like one of the he's an actor or something.
Okay. Sure,
I think. Anyway, yeah, he does this. Yeah, please go on. He does this show.
Okay. Well, anyways, the thing that I was specifically interested in is like these new delivery trucks called Arrival.
Yep.
And basically just like the size and scale of like electric vehicles. It's hard to kind of tell how much is like marketing hype versus, you know, like how many are actually being produced. But like they're, you know, like.
But it does actually exist. It physically exists. It's being made in America. Yeah. Anyway, if you don't know, the show is all about electric cars. So it's specifically an electric car show, you know.
Yeah.
So.
And there's a lot of cool stuff out there. But yeah,
And there's this company, there's this new...
New to me.
There's this new company that just got a contract for 10,000 electric vans.
Right, for UPS.
Wow, UPS. Yeah. Wow, what a score. Yeah, what a score. But don't they look great? I want one.
I mean, they're designed like buses.
Oh, yeah, they're like little mini buses kind of.
Super ergonomic and stuff like that. And like, and the stats were kind of interesting too because they were talking about like the delivery like distances were, it was only like, you know, like 40 miles or whatever that is in kilometers, 60 kilometers, something like that. Or is that the other direction? I don't know.
65, something like that. Yes.
Yeah. And it was like over like very short distances where actually like, oh, that makes a lot more sense than I would have guessed. Like I always assumed that like driving around a city, they have tons and tons and tons of stops, but it's actually many fewer than I thought it would be. And so like in terms of like range for a truck like this, it actually is potentially doable. I guess I always assumed that they had a lot more coverage area. So that's kind of cool. And then, you know, it's just like the whole, they keep saying like skateboard. I watched a bunch of their videos. They keep talking about the skateboard design. That's like the standard thing these days, like a Tesla or any other, you know, car does as well, where it's just the entire floor is all batteries.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Apparently that's like a standard design now. So
anyway, I want one of these and I want to convert it into a mobile lab. Just because.
There you go. Yeah.
Dude, nice. Mate, it's just, it looks so schmick. You got to see this thing. I mean, it's a real thing. And they just got a contract to build 10,000 of them in the US. California, is it? Are they another Californian company? I'm not sure.
Yeah, I don't know where they were. Yeah.
Anyway, fantastic.
Oh, no, wait. Oh, no, there's a different one. There was one that was like it was outside of Chicago. There was a different. Car that's they're, you know, they just use old, you know, just like Tesla did. They just take over old petrol based you know, car assembly manufacturing
plants.
But this one, I don't think this one was Chicago, so
anyway, this one started from scratch. So this company, like, and they custom build these electric car, like, they're doing these like van kind of things at the moment. But they've got, you know, many different types. You can actually approach them if you've like got a big enough, like they don't sell to the consumer yet, but they're, you know, so they're focusing on specific customers who have specific large scale needs, like the courier companies, your DHLs, your UPSs, you know, and all that sort of stuff, who need, you know, 10,000 trucks to drive around.
That's right. Yeah. You have a fleet of vehicles. Yeah.
Yeah. And they're focusing on that. And they actually won the contract to get 10,000, making 10,000 electric vans for UPS.
Yeah, that's great.
Oh, it's just absolutely brilliant. Yeah, I love this thing. And it's just,
And so on the topic of batteries too, there was a pretty good app note on DigiKey. It doesn't really say who's wrote it. I thought it might've been written by Maxim, but it's actually just it shows kind of like this is suggested by a friend and former guest of the show, Dan Hinch. But it's, you know, it's shows like some of the chemistry and why some of the voltages exist. I'm sure you've covered this kind of stuff before. But
I've done a video, many videos on lithium ion battery charging technology and stuff like that. Yep.
Yeah.
I have a whole playlist. Have a playlist devoted
okay,
to
we'll
that.
We'll link in the playlist for lithium batteries. That's about it for me, Dave. Anything else?
Nah, it's done. No amp hours up.
All right. I'll be back in a few weeks and Dave will be here in the meantime.
Yep. Catch you next time.
See ya.